do we have this morning? And please follow.
Good morning, all. You know, it's a shame when I've got to get the ACLU involved for me to exercise my constitutionally guaranteed right for preferred amendment to free speech. We see in the back the popo that are putting a chilling effect on my free speech rights and right to redress grievances against government. Another distinguished officer here and another one right over here. Sad but true. You know, I've written to Sarah Wilson, where you at, back on July 29th, and I didn't get a written response. You got my property. I'd like it returned to me. My backpack, as you are aware, Councilman Graham, large thing backpack, back on December the 5th, was stolen. No cameras out there. Can I get restitution? But then they want to get the good police chief, Tabor, where are you at? Saying, well, you can't come onto the property. Don't want my business. So I wonder why Metro is in the red. Look our way. Lawson, the rhetoric is sweet in the ears, but it's sour in the belly. Please return my property to me. I ask to be treated the way each and every one of you would want to be treated here. And thus far, it hasn't happened. I've been treated worse than a dog. Sad but true. Bruce Heppen, Deputy General Counsel. He saw fit to call me the day before and says, you're invited on Metro property, you can come and speak. And you can also go to the sales office, we invite your business. Then he flips the script and says, no, the police chief says you can't come on. He's confused. I'm confused. No wonder why Metro's confused. Help me help you help us, General Manager Cato. I gave you a copy of the letter to the good police chief. You know, and this ain't right. Obviously, we've got to defer to higher authority. Ramada invites litigation. And by the way, why is it Ramada under the jurisdiction of the Human Rights, Office of Human Rights? The Human Rights Act of 1977? You know, Councilman Graham, you've been a member in good standing of the EC Bar since 1973. Litigation costs. And across the street, over at the Office of Human Rights, mediation is required by law. It's win-win. Doesn't cost anything. So why not handle this complaint to exhaust my administrative remedy? I don't have that opportunity. Sound like a written response here. General Manager Cato, Mr. Lawson, Ms. Wilson, and the good police chief. Treat me the way you want to be treated. In fact, you turn the word and say, do to others as you would have them do to you. Thank you. And the question for today is always justice or just ice?
Thank you. Just leave it with the staff and we'll get to her. Thank you. Refer those questions to staff. The agenda has been previously distributed. Are there any amendments to the agenda as presented? Yeah, so if there's no objection, then we'll accept the agenda for the time being as presented. We have the minutes of the July 24th board meeting. Any comments, questions, corrections, amendments, or a motion to approve as presented? Moved by Mr. Graham, seconded by Mr. Benjamin. Further discussion, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. The minutes are accepted as presented. Item 5 is the report of the Writers Advisory Council. Is Ms. Yakimini here? Good morning.
Good morning. It is my pleasure to present you all with the Writers Advisory Council's report for September 2008. As always, my full remarks are in written form, I believe, in your notebooks. During this past month, RAC and its subcommittees received presentations from several different departments and had some very good dialogue with Vermont staff, both in our full committee and in our subcommittees. Dave Couch attended our regular September meeting and briefed us on Metro's plans for its system infrastructure renewal program. We're pleased that the implementation of this program is designed to minimize passenger inconvenience by shifting work from weekends to weeknights, and we hope it works. We do want staff to pay particular attention, however, to train headway times and to make sure everything is working well, because we do not want any rehabilitation-related train delays to cause riders to miss connecting buses, especially since many buses run on 30-minute headways during the late weekday evenings, and some buses even stop running at 9 or 10 o'clock, so we need to make sure that that's working. Our rail subcommittee met with Paul Gillum, Director of Metro's Office of Plant Maintenance. He gave us a very good overview of the duties and responsibilities of his office. Of particular interest to subcommittee members is the station enhancement program, which, as you all know, renews the stations every 3.5 years. As we know from the CIP discussion, the metro system is aging, and such periodic refreshings of facilities become increasingly important until the more in-depth renovations can be made. Assistant General Manager for Bus Services, Mila Victoria, and Joe Vicente, the IT Manager for Bus Services, attended the bus subcommittee to talk about bus on-time performance. I heard they gave a good overview of Metro's efforts to integrate the electronic monitoring systems on buses and to calculate bus on-time performance. Riders continually have questions about bus service. One I hear often is about the bus bunching on various lines. I know that issue was addressed in the 30s study. I hope this new data will help managers and supervisors work on the issue of bunching on other lines. Paper transfer elimination. Sarah Wilson, Metro's Assistant General Manager for Corporate Strategy and Communications, requested to come to our September meeting. She wanted to solicit ideas from RAP for Metro's outreach plans to alert riders that the end of the paper transfer, bus and rail, is rapidly coming to an end. We had a lively discussion, and members of the RAP are extremely concerned about Metro's preparations for the planned elimination of paper, rail-to-bus, and bus-to-bus transfers, which is still scheduled, to the best of my knowledge, to become effective January 4th, 2009. While this change in the way Metro has done business practically since its beginning was advertised as part of the fair hearings the board conducted back in November of 2007, it was really overshadowed by discussion on the increases in fares and parking fees. I think most riders are unaware of this change. And even though I attended the fare increase hearings, I'm a chairman of RAP, I have to tell you, it fell off my radar system until Ms. Wilson asked to come and speak with us. Due to the obviously close nature of the elimination of transfers in SmartTrip, the time of our discussion, Ms. Wilson, with her, we sort of moved from the topic at hand to our alarm about the status of the SmartTrip program. At this early September meeting, council members expressed concern about the availability of locations for customers to purchase and, more importantly, to reload their SmartTrip cards using either plastic or cash. Many bus riders whose travels do not take them through metro rail stations need better access to machines, either at bus transfer facilities or in neighborhoods at retailers like CVS and Giant. We understand that there's thought for that and they're just trying to be planning, but we're very concerned that it be in place. It is our understanding that the significant expansion of SmartTrip reloading stations will not occur maybe until spring 2009, months after the elimination of paper transfers. And I would emphasize that reloading a card is different from obtaining a card. Not all machines that give the cards can add more value to them. And right now, riders use the special ad fare machines in rail stations and in a few other locations. Of greatest concern is that the elements of the plan to expand SmartTrip will still remain uncertain. It is unclear whether balance transfer, which would allow for a discount when transferring from bus to rail as well as from rail to bus, would also be implemented on January 4th in concert with the elimination of paper. RAP understands that this has been a goal, but will it happen? Yes or no? Will riders in January 2009 have many options to obtain SmartTrip cards and to reload them using plastic or cash? You know, let's remember, a lot of our commuters still use cash. They may not have a debit or a credit card and they choose not to use it. Of course, this whole topic turned up again later this month in the Washington Post article. And I'll say to members that after the appearance of the article, I received some emails from RAP members. And one in particular was pretty vehement, saying that RAP should be outraged and that RAP needs to demand accountability from Willamette. I did remind the member that indeed RAP has been trying to pursue the SmartTrip issue and one of the speakers since spring. This has been a little hard to schedule with some of the staff changes, but we're really glad that the new office head will be with us in October. You know, we all know chairmen have different styles, and mine has been to say that we're all professionals in this room. Staff, board members, RAP members, we all need to work together, listen to each other, and not be dismissive of each other. I don't really care to rant, but I do like to emphasize. We all have areas of expertise, and I think we do all respect each other, and we all bring different eyes to situations. While the staff and board members may ride Metro, bus or rail, they have certain knowledge of operations that regular riders don't have. So they may understand the situation a rider doesn't. And RAF pretty much is in the same position, so we can bring our perspectives to the table in a very good way to help with the riders. When I say to you today that RAF doesn't believe WMATA should go paperless until Smart Trip is fully operational and accessible for purchase and reloading, I mean it with all our professional expertise as riders. You know, people don't turn on a dime. They need time to adjust, and they need to have working alternatives before what they've become accustomed to goes away. You all heard testimony from riders last November during the fare increase hearings. You know, it was interesting. Few flat out said no to fare increases. They didn't want them, but they wanted better service. And while it's true electronic Smart Trip will ultimately make for better service, it will be a disaster if it's rolled out before all its parts are ready. And it will be disastrous to have paper go away before Smart Trip is fully functional. I'm hopeful the consultant the board authorized in July and will vote on later at this meeting will assure forward progress for the clearly troubled Smart Trip program. I also hope they will be brutally honest with staff and management here and state when the program will be ready. And in my own personal opinion, if it's not ready by November or December, then don't change things in January. Everyone needs ramping up time. Since any change is difficult, we shouldn't make it more difficult by not giving riders a running start. Let's think about January. It'll be one of the biggest events we have every 4 years, the inauguration. And there will be the inevitable bad weather that happens in January, February, and even March here in Washington. Piling on taking away paper transfers and not having a fully working and accessible Smart Trip program, I think is just going to add to this mess, particularly, I think, for our bus operators. As always, I look forward to answering any questions you may have, and I thank you again for having me this morning.
Thank you.
Let me say that on this principal issue here before us involving Smart Trip, and especially the pending elimination of paper transfer, something we've been trying to work toward for a number of years, that I think the basic sentiment that Ms. Iacomini conveys, in particular, you know, her statement that the timing of the changes should be driven by Metro's readiness to implement the changes rather than simply by a date fixed on the calendar, is one with which I certainly agree, and I expect board members will as well. And I'm going to ask before we're done that, Mr. Cato, you find a time when the board can be thoroughly briefed on the status of, you know, Smart Trip, where this is going, and specifically in the context of the proposal, the plan to eliminate paper transfers, so that we all can become assured that everything's in place that needs to be for that implementation, and that we don't run into the very kinds of problems that the Riders Council is you know, pointing us to. The questions, Mr. Grant.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm the chairman of the customer service. I always have to look to remember the name of the committee because it's a very long name. But I'm chairman of customer service, operations, and safety. And I'd like to.
Absolutely. Mr. Chair, if you wish for me to respond to some of it today, I can, but I think it would be better if I go into detail with the committee next month.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
All right, we have two new officials who Mr. Cato has appointed and who need to take their oaths. And I would ask to have first Mr. Monomay come forward. Mr. Cato, you want to say anything to tell us what we're doing here?
Absolutely. You're swearing in two essential new members of this organization. Mr. Monomay, I have worked with you over the past year in a different capacity.
He did look vaguely familiar.
Yes. But when you hired me, one of the goals that you said was for me to hire the best and the brightest. And in both of these cases, in the Mecca Monomay and also at Carl Kissel, I have hired the best and the brightest. One is the Chief Administrative Officer and the other the Chief Financial Officer. So I'm honored to present them to you today. It's a great day and for Metro, and I'm very excited about having them on board.
Okay, why don't we have Mr. Monomay and Ms. Kissel both come forward now.
Okay.
The Senator.
Okay.
I don't know, do they ever, do you guys get a copy of the oath before you have to take it?
We did, we were asked if we had an issue.
Oh, okay. Because I never know, I get a copy, I know what I'm telling you to say. All right, well, I'm going to ask each to raise your right hand. You're going to say aye in your name, and so aye.
Carol Kissel.
Do hereby solemnly swear.
Do hereby solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States. And the provisions of. The Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority Compact. Okay, we're going to do that again because you can't take your job if you can't say this. The Washington Metropolitan Transit Area Transit Authority Compact.
Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority Compact.
Ah, good. And that I will faithfully and impartially discharge and perform all duties incumbent on me. As Chief Administrative Officer, as Chief Financial Officer of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority, according to the best of my ability. Congratulations. Tongue-twisting title of our organization, which is why we call it Metro.
That's why I like Metro too, Mr. Chairman.
All right. We will now go to the General Manager for his report. Mr. Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to say welcome back. This is the first board meeting since July. And as you can tell by the weather, fall is here, and we have a lot of things to discuss in the coming months, and I look forward to working with the board, and our staff looks forward to working with you on those issues. First, I'd like to talk about reauthorization. Since our last meeting, I've been working on a number of important issues, including the future of federal funding for transit agencies across the country. As you know, the current surface transportation authorization bill is set to expire in just about a year. And as co-chair of the Reauthorization Committee of the American Public Transportation Association, I've been working hard to ensure that Congress is aware of our needs, and I'm advocating for a particular focus on funding the core capacity needs of the industry and of our system specifically. Also, I'd like to emphasize that board member Peter Benjamin has been very actively involved in this process, and he's played a key role in leading the discussion for this proposed legislation. From a dedicated funding standpoint, in light of our discussion about the capital needs this morning, I'd like to inform you we're seeing some more signs of federal support for our efforts to secure a reliable source of funding. Last night, the House of Representatives passed by voice vote a provision that would authorize $1.5 billion in federal funding for Metro over 10 years. This provision was part of the Amtrak Rail Safety Bill. And the next step is for the bill to pass in the Senate. The information that we receive is some vote will take place before the end of next week. An update on our safety improvement. One of the first steps in creating a safety culture is to establish an environment in which people feel comfortable addressing their peers and their subordinates, as well as their managers when they observe unsafe conditions. And I like to tell the story that of the time that once a service attendant stopped me in the bus yard and refused to let me pass until I put on the safety vest. That's the kind of action that only happens when you create a sense of trust among the members of the workforce. And while I'm pleased to say that almost all of our senior managers, including myself, have now undergone training in how to conduct what we call safety conversations, the executive team completed this last week. And with this first step, I'm looking forward to bring about an even bigger culture change with our focus on safety. Mr. Chair, again, every month we highlight the excellent work of our employees. And this month is no different. And I would ask that Gerald Francis our deputy general manager provide information on the employee who we'll highlight this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I can have you and Mr. Cato come to the center of the room. Okay. I also would like to invite our employee spotlight, bus operator Michael Austin. On down, Mr. Austin. Operator Austin's actions were brought to our attention through a commendation that was submitted by one of our customers. I will read a few of the customer's comments at this time. Yesterday, I arrived at the Tacoma Metro Station, and I was told there was a problem at Metro Center and that I should take a bus. Like many of the people who were being redirected, I am not a regular bus passenger, so I'm not familiar with the bus routes. A Metro employee at Tacoma Station directed a number of us who were going to Metro Center to a Metro bus waiting out in front of the station. I just want you to know how terrific the Metro bus driver was. He got a busload of slightly grouchy people, myself included, but by the time each of us got off at our stops, we were talking to each other and just generally enjoying the ride. When each customer got on the bus driver asked each of us where we intended to go. He remembered what each and every one of us told him, and then he made sure we knew when we had arrived to our destination. He made sure that no one was forgotten or missed their stop. A day that started out to be not so terrific became quite lovely thanks to your driver. He did all this with a beautiful smile and great humor. Just like to say, Mr. Austin, at Metro, we appreciate the input from our customers, both when they identify a problem or commend our employees. Excellent customer service, even in the most trying times, is our goal. So will you please join me in recognizing, with his great humor, bus operator Michael Austin.
Warm statement of love, I conclude my presentation.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Cato. Good. All right. The next item is the report of the Committee on Customer Service Operations and Safety. Mr. Graham.
Thank you very much. This is the report from our meeting of September 11, 2008. We had entirely information items, but we had important information items. Mr. Francis provided the committee with a brief review of the significant FY08 accomplishments and the final FY08 report on performance indicators as compared to FY07. For the first time, bus on-time performance was presented showing how WMATA compares to the industry established averages. We requested additional information for our next meeting, which is going to be provided. Metro Transit police crime statistics were also presented by Deputy Chief Dolinsky, with the types of crimes and quantity per calendar year from 2003 to 2008. Again, there will be additional information at our next meeting. Mr. Edwards provided an update on the FY08 safety performance indicators, which showed very, very solid progress from year previous. There was also a successful implementation of the Metro Access door-to-door service was described by Ms. Dalton Cummins, and that seems to be doing very well also. We had some discussion of the subsidy impact on the discontinuation of Medicaid transportation services in DC, and a brief overview was provided by Mr. Kent, and we will have much more information on that in the future. That concludes our report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. Next item is the report of the Committee on Finance Administration and Oversight. Mr. Benjamin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have before you the one action item that came out of this committee. You will note that it's on blue paper and is different from what the committee reported out. This is the request for board approval to extend N22 and to end N98 in fiscal 09. Originally, what the committee approved was to hold a public hearing for the ending of both N22 and 98. The request to hold a public hearing to end N22 has been dropped from this package. So what you have before you is an extension of N22 for 6 months with no indication as to what will happen at the end of the 6 months, and a hearing to end Route 98 effective the end of March. That changed the finances of this, and there will be a cost to the District of Columbia as a result of this, as opposed to a savings that was in the original package.
Mr. Benjamin, just to clarify, originally there were changes to two routes, both of which I gather the district was going to be taking over, and they were moving out, and they've now decided to do the one but hold off on the other.
Correct.
And so that's why the 6 months.
They were going to be circulator services, but at this point they've decided not to shift N22 to circulator service at the end of 6 months. So we'll have to deal with N22 between now and then.
But they are doing the change on
But
the
they are asking for the change on Route 98, or at least for the public hearing to be held.
Which is the action before us, in fact.
Which is the action before us. Well, we also have to approve the extension of N22 service and the financing of that service through March.
Amending the budget with the district's funding.
Correct.
Okay.
And I would ask for a district motion to do this, just to make sure that we're all okay here.
I'll recognize Mr. Graham. Mr. Graham moves approval of the recommendation on the blue sheet. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Benjamin seconds. Discussion, Mr. Graham.
Thank you very much. Yes, you have accurately described what we have in mind here. Let me just say that the 98 bus, which is the Adams Morgan New Street link, which has been fully funded by the District of Columbia, is the subject of a hearing to terminate that route in favor of what will be a northern expansion of the DC circulator, a proposal that we're working on right now. The N22 situation is, we do call for an expansion or a continuation of the expansion that we have in place right now, but in terms of a hearing to end that route, to terminate that route, we want to have a pause so we can examine various factors relating to it. And this should result in better quality of bus service for the people in these neighborhoods, and thus we're supportive. Thank you.
Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Does that conclude your report?
That concludes the report of our committee.
All right. That will bring us to the report of the Committee on Planning, Development, and Real Estate. Ms. Hudgens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Planning and Real Estate Development and Real Estate Committee met this morning in executive session and in public session. Coming out of the executive session, the two items are regarding policy changes, one on the guidelines for business ethics and criteria. Integrity criteria were referred to the committee for a later date, as well as the small local minority business enterprise policies referred to for a later date. The Greenbelt station was deferred indefinitely. The action item number four is the authorization to transfer
the
Ramada.
Ms. Hudgens?
Yes.
On that item number three, that is a motion to defer
action
on
this. I'm sorry, you're right. And at this point, I want to move approval that we defer the Greenbelt item indefinitely. Further notice.
Okay, so it's the motion is to defer this item until it's not a date certain.
Not a date certain, that's right.
Okay. Well, it's deferral. We don't actually have the rules. Is there a second to the motion?
Yes, Mrs.
Is there a print? Since this is
it
a print, I would assume. Okay, seconded by Ms. Euler. All right, discussion on the motion.
My understanding is that the item will be deferred until such time as there's resolution issues around it that don't directly affect us at this point, but...
Correct.
Okay. Any further discussion, questions? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries.
The next item is the transfer of the WMATA property rights at the Shaw and Howard University Station, and there is a motion that we proceed with the disposition of the property and as agreed upon. This one has been moved to postpone that until the committee meets at a further date.
Is that a motion?
That's a motion.
Second. Second by Mr. Graham. Discussion?
We support this 1 month delay.
Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Next item.
And the next action item was the request for a proposal for the replacement of the Royal Street bus garage. And that one also has, I think, the changes that were discussed in committee on a blue sheet in our book here. So I'm moving approval that the request for proposal be... for the replacement of the facility of the Royal Street Metro Garage, move forward.
I'll second the motion, but do we have a revised document on that, right?
There is a revised document, and
that's the blue one. Okay.
Yes. See it in the blue sheet.
Mr. Benjamin, you look right here.
Well, and my only concern is that one of the changes was saying that there will be no capital funds. That one of the changes is to say that there may be that it will require no capital funds, and in fact I would just delete that part and leave the part that says funding impact will be determined when we consider the proposals, because we don't know whether it will be a capital or an operating.
Is there objection to that amendment? Delete those words. Hearing none, by unanimous consent that amendment is made. Strike those words. That's the motion before us now.
And I believe that the description has been modified to broaden the solicitation adequately.
Very well.
Those are our corrections.
Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
And the next item is the sale of the WMATA property at Keystar Spring Place, and the motion is to obtain committee sell the excess property adjacent to the CX Railroad right of way in the Commonwealth and District of Columbia. Move approval.
Second.
Motion by Ms. Hudgens, seconded by Mr. Graham. Discussion? Let me say, I voted no on this in committee, and by way of explanation, for those not as familiar with me, as those who have been around here a while, I have, I hate to say traditionally, because that makes me sound really old, but I have always opposed selling land that I think is strategically placed near metro stations more than anything particularly involved in this sale. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I'll vote no. The ayes have it. That is approved in the sessions.
And the next two items were information items. On one, the 700 series car, and this is the reconfiguration that staff has proposed. Staff will return to the board and the finance, to the committee, finance committee on November 6th. As they move through this proposal. The second item is a very important item to us, and it's on the capital needs, and the committee was able to hear a brief report from the staff on the Metro's capital improvement needs, and they will come back to us with further discussion of this item in spring for actual detail from the staff and general manager. The last item was on the relocation of the WMATA headquarters building was deferred to the next committee meeting.
At the request of the District of Columbia.
That's correct. And those are all items.
All right. Thank you very much. That will move us to item 11, administrative actions. There are three. The first is the approval to initiate and award a contract for car sharing services. Mr. Cato, brief report.
Just very briefly, back in 2001, the Board approved.
Thank you. Back in 2001, the Board approved the award of a contract with FlexCar, and later a contract was approved and expanded with one that had four-year options. In 2004, we approved a contract with Zipcar. The two firms have now merged, The contracts expire on November 30th of 2008, and this contract would allow us to continue those services, which are critical to some of the riders who use the system.
All right, other questions? Mr. Lynn.
Previously, this contract was no revenue, current contract no revenue, and I know this opportunity of having patient
cars available at the time, this was a developing issue, and all of these companies were in their infancy, and I thought that the, you know, there was a major interest in promoting the concept. But I know since then these companies are no longer in their infancy, and some of them are doing fairly well. And I'm curious as to whether or not the RFP that's going out will also be of no revenue.
This is framed as a no revenue contract. I think it's our understanding that they're still not at the level of profitability, and there's also a question about whether the level of funding we could get from them, from the industry, would justify the level of administrative costs of administering that, in addition to which we continue to get surveys from those firms that indicate that the ridership benefits and the off-peak hours are significant and are a benefit to the system, and we're providing a service to, I believe it's, what was the number of the 15? We're enabling transit-oriented development and a reduction of reliance on private automobiles. I can't remember exactly how many cars were taken off the road. 15 cars per space is the number of people being taken off the road today. So we think that there are all those benefits. At the same time, we understand in the fiscal environment we're in that we need to be looking for additional revenue. And I don't know what the Kristen, what would the future opportunities be to do that?
And I think if we were to consider a revenue sharing arrangement, that may be something that we could consider going forward if that was something that the board wished to consider. At this point, we've always assumed that you know, with the beginning of the program, that the board had wished to be no revenue, so we have continued it as such.
So when you say going forward, you mean after this?
Yes.
Not with this contract, but with a subsequent one?
If yes, after this contract.
And this is a proposal for a 1 year with options?
Yes.
Which we would not have to exercise?
That's right.
So we could a year from now say, you know, we think these guys are making money and we want you to go see about it.
Yes.
Yeah, but that's not, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry, Mr. Lynn, will you?
Well, the other question I have related to that is, what is their, since this is a national effort, what is the nature of their contract with other transit agencies?
Zipcar, in particular, who's our contractor, is contracted with New Jersey Transit, and they're also serving Chicago's Transit Authority. There are other car sharing, more localized car sharing companies that serve BART, for example, City Car Share in the Bay Area serves BART.
Excuse me, can we be more specific? I'm aware of the car sharing industry and the other providers. I was more interested in what is the revenue relationship with the current providers that we're using with the transit agencies.
Are they paying anybody else?
They're getting the same deal.
Director Lynn, if I could, I can speak certainly to the district's experience there. As we were at DDOT, we actually subsidized or did not ask for any revenue. I think we need to be sensitive to the fact that this is a regional initiative, and what we need to do needs to balance itself across the entire region. I know in the city, to encourage people to get out of their vehicles and to use transit, we've made it easier, financially more attractive for them to use the car sharing services. So
but
I don't know
the answer to Mr. Lynn's question.
Other transit agencies? I'm not sure if there's other transit agencies that charge.
I do not know if other transit agencies are charging. I do know that we have been approached for our model for a couple transit agencies, including New Jersey Transit. So at this point, I'm assuming they're using ours. I don't know.
I'm not aware of any.
And I'm not. Yeah, I'm not aware of it.
And we had one before.
We had ours before many others did, so, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they haven't done something else. Mr. Graham and then Mr. Benjamin.
Thank you very much. You know, I've been very supportive of this and the Metro Board and on the in D.C. But, you know, I see increasingly that these services are renting private spaces, increasingly. And you know, what we did at the inception very much on the Arlington model, I might add, because I think you, Arlington County was the first to really extend public space. What we did in the, with the inception of this program need not be carried on forever. And, you know, at some point, you know, these companies have enough vitality where they should be, you know, obtaining their parking spaces. And I think there's very much a question in my mind in terms of the District of Columbia where there is a lingering resentment associated with the fact that public spaces, public parking spaces in many instances have been given free to a private enterprise. And so we have some complexity of these issues. I just want to say, you know, now that the industry is more mature, I don't know whether it's completely arrived, but it certainly looks very stable to me. I mean, on 14th Street, if you want to go to 14th Street at R, just below R, you'll see an entire parking lot that has been rented. I mean, probably 25 spaces for these cars. So anyway, the other point I just wanted to make in terms of the options, options don't, unless I'm mistaken, options don't typically come before the board. I mean, are they exercised without board review or not?
I thought we would have some say in that.
Well, let me just ask.
Answer the question, please.
The last one we did not bring before the board.
Okay, so
there's not an automatic. We ought not to assume that we're going to do this for a year and then have another crack at this, because this could, next time we hear about this, could be 5 years.
But the board can sort of act, and the board certainly has been close on this one. Ms. Scott, you want to address the previous question?
Yes, if there's, based upon this discussion, we could do a one-year contract and do a lot of the work to determine how successful these companies are and whether or not we should charge and bring it back to you next year.
Okay. Mr. Benjamin, say.
Is there a downside to putting this contract out, leaving open the possibility that we would get paid? Putting the RFP out that way and say, see what we get as a response?
I think we would just have to do a temporary extension, but we could do that.
We could. In fact, written into the RFP is a request that the proposers propose some kind of revenue arrangement with us. So certainly the RFP can be evaluated on the proposals for that particular issue.
Well, then why don't we incorporate that in the RFP that we're putting out? Mm-hmm. Everybody comfortable with that?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, to put it out that it's part of the offer to, you know, if you want to make us an offer on payment, because this is a bid, right? So anybody who wants to come forward, wants to say they'll pay us some revenue, they can put that in.
But does that mean that a private company could then, you know, respond to the RFP to rent the spaces?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it is just that. It's an RFP.
So no, but I mean, a non-car-sharing company could respond and say, well, we'll rent these spaces.
With or without this, anybody who wants to, who says, I can do this business, can apply, and it has to be evaluated then whether, in fact, we think they're capable of doing so.
Because we all know parking rental companies, you know, are we saying they would be qualified to apply for this?
What we're saying, I believe, is that this is for car sharing. Right. And anybody who provides car sharing would be able to bid, not just somebody who wants to
provide the service that we now receive.
Yeah, but we would solicit paying customers for this, paying bidders.
That's the point, yes.
Okay.
It's open for that. Now, somebody can bid and say, I can do this, but I can't pay anything because it's going to cost me. And someone else can come in and say, well, I can. And then you have to evaluate whether those, you know, which of those is the best value.
And that decision will come back to us.
And ultimately, the decision to award the contract will come back here. This is an initiate. It's an RFP, right? It's not a contract award.
An initiate and award.
Okay, well, why don't we make that an initiate and you bring it back to what we've been trying to bring more of those back to us. And I think everyone would like to see this one before the contract is awarded. Yes?
Thank you.
Since unanimous consent on that matter. Mr. Lynn?
Just on a moment, Mr. Chair. I just think it's clear. I want to be very clear that I'm very supportive of the car sharing. I think it provided good services for our constituents. It's vital, something that I've been advocating for a long time. So I'm happy that it's here, and I'm happy that we're continuing it. But I also think that it's important for us from time to time to evaluate relationships that were established in the infancy, and that we're in a different day, and we should at least examine whether or not there's some other opportunity to get relationship at this point. And that's all I'm suggesting.
Thank you, Mr. Linton. I agree with your points and certainly appreciate this discussion shows the vigilance that members are applying to the effort to find revenue anywhere that can help us in our mission. But I would also say that we do need to keep in mind that this is something that throws off a lot of public benefit. That's why we advanced it here at Metro first in the region, and then local governments, as Mr. Graham noted. My county got very heavily into this and provided on-street spaces near Metro stations initially, and have a number of them now in a number of other locations. And we now have somewhere around 4,000 or 5,000 members of car sharing in our county. And so it's been extremely popular. And it's in our interest to do so, and we've explained to people who say, how can you take the parking space away, by saying that's actually freeing up parking spaces, because we know when we do that there are fewer private cars, because it enables people to give up a car, which is what they do. Many households like mine, for instance, go car light. We have one car and three drivers and membership in car sharing. And others who live near Metro stations, we don't, go without a car entirely because they can do that. And so it tangibly reduces the amount of cars you have to store on the street, people who go to work and so on, who will take transit knowing that if they should need a car to leave, there's one there that they can get. They go right on the computer, they get it, and they drive it, and they bring it back, and they didn't have to bring their car in the first place. And I think Arlingtonians have really come to understand that it helps all of us in keeping cars off our streets, so it's advantageous. And that's something we're all learning. It's also important to remember that this still is an industry in its infancy, and I don't know how profitable it is. We had two companies, and now we only have one. And so, you know, that's another thing to bear in mind. And I think eventually this should be something that produces revenue for everybody. I don't personally know if we're there yet. So the motion, do we have a motion?
We had a motion.
Who had moved?
I moved.
You moved. Okay. Mr. Graham moves. With the amendments stated, opening up the RFP in the way we described and specifying that the contract award would come back to the board. Was there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Benjamin. For the discussion, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Next item concerns a request to initiate and award multiple contracts for payment of phone bills and upgrade of the voice communication system. Mr.
Cato? Moved.
Moved by Mr. Graham.
Second.
Second by Mr. Benjamin. Is there any further explanation? Anybody have any questions? Okay. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. And thirdly, approval of Smart Trip Program Consultant. Mr. Cato, you should say something about this. Mr. Cato, Ms. Zeman, anybody you'd like?
Ray Green.
Back in July, you gave us the authorization to initiate a competitive procurement for the consultant for the Smart Trip Program. We have done that. We were fortunate to receive several highly competitive proposals. This was the best value procurement. We've selected an award going to a firm called Acumen Building Enterprises from Oakland, California. They have extensive experience in fare collection and smart trip work through a number of the major transit authorities. And this will be for a period of 30 months, a base year of 12 months with a option year for 12 months, and then a second option year for 6 months.
One thing I would, the report says the Board of Directors approved on July 9th. I don't believe we had a meeting on July 9th. Isn't that like a Wednesday? Was it at the board meeting in July? Wasn't that on the 24th?
This may have been the 24th, sir.
Okay. I just wanted to be clear that it was by board action,
right,
at a board meeting. Mr. Benjamin.
Also, I'm ready to move this item. I would like to get one correction in there, and that is that out years are subject to approval of those budgets.
Yes, sir.
Which is not in this.
Okay, so this would be to initiate and award subject to out year budget approvals, which I think in some ways is always implicit, but it's good to make it explicit.
Normally stated. It was not stated in this.
Thank you for doing so. Motion by Mr. Benjamin. Is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Hudgens. Is there discussion? Questions? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Reports. Mr. Graham for the district.
Thank you very much. I do want to report that the general manager and others testified before the our council committee of the whole this week. Was it Monday? Tuesday?
Sir, it was Monday.
It was Monday. On a bill which would further concretize the district's $50 million commitment to dedicated funding for this system. The bill that was the subject of Mr. Cato's testimony would create a $50 million reserve fund within our budget, which would fund what has previously been a very concrete commitment to take a small portion of our sales tax and make it available to Metro as part of our commitment for the $50 million. So we very much appreciate your testimony, Mr. Cato. I think it was very helpful. During that testimony, by the way, he also provided us with the report on capital needs, which was the subject of a great deal of publicity this week, I might add, alerting to the public to the $11.2 billion need. Although you didn't mention that figure at the council, I don't know why, but perhaps it slipped your mind. These big numbers sometimes slip people's minds. But anyway, he was there, and for me, it was a second run through today on the capital needs report. But we thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. WSTC, Mr. Benjamin.
No report.
NBCC.
Actually, it should be Mr. Linton from here on in, because he is now our chair.
Ah.
Do you have a report?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Linton.
No report.
Now it's official. There's no report from BSTC. Secretary will note the change for future agendas. And NBTC, Ms. Hudgens.
No report.
In that case, I move that the board meet in executive session to discuss labor issues with respect to Local 689, consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6C, budgetary matters with respect to financial risk mitigation, consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6A, and safety and security matters with respect to June 9th, 2008, consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6F. Is there a second?
Second
by Mr. Benjamin. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. We are now going to go in closed session. We will return afterwards in open session to certify the closed session and to take action on any items that may have arisen from the closed meeting. Thank you.